different than what was in the program, but it's right up here. So first, Dr. Laura Fenster-Rothschild is going, who is currently serves as the Director of Education and Training. I'm not going to read all this. I'm just obnoxious at Rutgers. She's going to talk about some of the leadership things they've done and how they've shown that leadership skills have improved. And then she will be followed by Danielle Cooper, whose real name is Judy. No, just kidding. In the program, it was someone else, Judy Steyer, who was going to talk about this. But Danielle is going to talk about a program that actually, one of the leadership programs that they've done. And I will let them discuss that more.
Originally, I thought these were very different. But in actuality, I'm not sure that they are that different. This is, you know, Aaron gave us sort of a good lead into where we're going. So I'm going to talk to us a little bit about the school health leadership program that we have going on and the process that we've been through over the 20 years. But I think the lens for us to think about this is that lens between population health and what's happening in the schools. And it's really speaking, Aaron talked about the data sharing, but these are methodology sharing, we'll say, and really ways that we can be implementing cross silos, as we like to call them at the university. So I have a disclosure. The Johnson & Johnson Corporate Foundation, as you would imagine by the name of our program, is our sole sponsor and provider for the Johnson & Johnson project, although they do not have impact on content delivery or data collection. So I'm from the Center of Alcohol Studies and the Director of Education and Training there, and in 1988, the director who was there before me, started this relationship with the Johnson & Johnson, which, as you may know, is in New Brunswick, right down the road from where our offices are. And the idea was that they wanted school nurses to be part of the game to do prevention, to be at the table and thinking about how can they support work that was happening. And at the time, it was around drugs and alcohol that were happening in the school. And for the next 20 years, they did that. They expanded from drugs and alcohol and just giving school nurses information about drugs and alcohol to other healthcare issues. And they had a lovely 5-day program that happened in the summer where school nurses came and they got some content knowledge and then they went back to their schools and did what they did with it. And in 2008, Johnson & Johnson said to the center, well, what have we been doing? What are our impacts? Are we affecting kids? Is there a change happening from what we're doing? And so at that time, I was working in a community-based organization and the center engaged me to help them with a process to evaluate the program. And so we jumped in as a redesign initiative. We knew that things weren't going to be able to be the same. We knew that the just giving knowledge, for any of you who work with me for more than 30 seconds, hear me say, you know, knowledge doesn't change behavior. It doesn't. If it did, we'd be fantastic and the world would be perfect, right? Because everybody knows not to smoke, right? Nobody would tell you tobacco is good for you. Everybody knows it's not, and people still smoke. So knowledge doesn't necessarily change behavior. And so when we dove in as a redesign initiative, and we gathered this really thoughtful process that brought down individuals from the field. I should say the Center of Alcohol Studies is a multidisciplinary freestanding center at Rutgers University. We believe in having multiple lenses to look at a problem, from genetics through, you know, population statistics epidemiologists. And so this is the same approach we took with this project. We examined best practices in the field, we explored options for including technology, and we used all this information to design a new program. The design emerged really from two important groups, one which was a steering committee of 12 people, which included representation from the school nursing field as well as other health fields, who met over the course of the next 2 years to look at the data and think about it and start to put together what would be a new program. And the second was a larger group of a community advisory panel that we pulled from alumni, folks with high vested interests, folks who perhaps were naysayers, saying that we weren't doing what we needed to be doing or what the program could be doing. And we spent 2 days with them on retreat collecting as much information in a process of modified focus groups that if anyone's interested in talking about, I can talk about that some other time. But 2 days full of them to gather the information. And what came out of that process was that the project was good and there were a lot of things that needed to be moved forward, but there were a lot of ways that we could be more effective. And so from there, the teams came up with a 3-tier design, one that would have directed interventions that we would continue to support a certain number of school nurses in giving them direct training to change things. The second tier that would be far-reaching, so a way that we could take some of the information that was happening and really affect the masses, perhaps not with the same intensity or dosage, but in enough to get people starting to think differently about how they were being school nurses in the school. And the third was through advanced training. One of the things that we know about prevention programming, and my background is in prevention, is that you can't just do it once and expect people to sustain the knowledge forever. They go back to the way they were originally trained. You know, clinical people go back to clinical, population people go back to data. You know, if you want them doing things differently, you have to continue to give them what we call in the field booster sessions. So, you know, updates to their knowledge and skill. Okay, so we entered this process with this vision that school nurse leaders would utilize evidence-based or scientifically supported population health strategies to improve child health and school community outcomes. This idea that kids are in schools, that's the place they are. All kids are in school in the United States, and if we were going to change population health in communities, that we could start with young people. So, you don't have to read this, but we spent a lot of time thinking about how is it going to work? How are we going to get to the place where we can do a set number of strategies that are not ridiculous and get us to a place where we're going to have long-term outcomes? And those long-term outcomes were happening on two levels. One, we wanted communities who had our fellows that were trained in them to be able to address health concerns and to take on crises, and they could account for local needs and resources and evidence-based strategies. And the second was, we wanted the young people, just from the beginning, to demonstrate better health practices. So both community outcomes as well as individual young outcomes in the young people in the communities. And so how are we going to get there? We knew that this was a two-step process. The first place we were going to start was in developing the individual skills of the nurses who were involved in the program. We wanted them to be able to identify community health issues. We wanted them to know what it meant to do needs and resource assessments. We wanted them to not only think that they were the only ones with the resource or the only ones who could do this and how they could engage other people. We wanted them to be able to communicate about the potential role of school nurses in addressing community and population health and their role in it, not their need to do it all, and not their, you know, they wanted us, we want them to communicate what Aaron communicated to you, how they can be helpful in the process. We wanted them to be able to design what we call enduring change plans, but they're program plans and evaluations. We wanted them to know what it meant to take a need, think about appropriate interventions, and figure out if it worked at the end, and all the steps it takes in the middle to facilitate that process happening. Not necessarily to do every step. Those are different things, to facilitate the process. And then we also knew that they still needed the most up-to-date knowledge and best practices and current trends and basic health information. We believed that when that would happen, that we'd get some of these midterm goals. We believed that the communities would develop groups of relevant stakeholders who were used to working together and had strategies in which they could work together, both at the beginning and then later on, that there would be effective methods of addressing health concerns, that they'd have a model for doing this in their community. So they may be looking at X now, and when Y comes up down the road, they already know how to do it because they've done it before. That the environmental conditions in the communities would be more conducive to positive health outcomes, and that we would see our school nurses not in their offices putting Band-Aids on, with all due respect to the other school nurses in the room, but that they would be leaders in the community. They would be doing the kind of work out there that was facilitating health as opposed to responding and putting out fires. So how are we doing this? So the Johnson & Johnson School Health Leadership Program is a two-year fellowship model. We begin with a competitive application process where we recruit teams of school nurses and executive sponsors from communities. This is a really important change in the model. We know that when you put one person who means well and has really great thought process into a community with 10 naysayers, you don't hit the tipping point. Right? It doesn't change the way you think about what school nurses can do in communities. And so we backed up and said, we need to be bringing in teams from communities. You all define your communities, we said to the great public, but then send us your school nurse from that community that you've defined. And with them, send an executive sponsor. The executive sponsors for our programs are perhaps administrators like yourself who has a group of school nurses who would be working for them, or people from the public health department, or people from the state health department, folks in the community who have a vested interest in health moving forward and access to resources that the school nurse who's working in the school may not have access to, because it's that marriage, that synergy between those groups that are going to move some of these projects forward. together, they come to a six-day leadership training institute with us, which is a residential institute. They still spend 6 days on site in New Brunswick. I should say we have a national draw. People come from all over the country to do this. And I'll talk a little bit more about the institute. We have online learning both prior to the institute and afterwards. Prior prepares them for the leadership training at the institute. Afterwards is where they're getting the specific health knowledge in specific areas related to health. They have to develop community-based health promotion initiatives. They have to do it right away. Once we teach them how to do it, they got to do it, and they got to get coaching to do it. So we provide high-quality technical assistance in the schools. We call it community health coaching because technical assisting is hard to swallow in terms of language. But, you know, our faculty out there match with the communities the best they can to help them at least the first time through. And that we want participation in the alumni network. They need to be able to come back and say, it worked once, it's not working again, what are other people doing around this, and help facilitate that communication. So the Leadership Institute is 6 days in New Brunswick, New Jersey. I talked already about the teams coming together, and the key to this is that we pay all expenses except travel. So interestingly, when people pay nothing for training, they don't show up. They don't. They don't walk through the door. You have an attrition rate. When we pay everything, housing, meals, $50,000 worth of training per person, about amounts to, but the district got them there, or they got themselves there, they always show up. And this is, you know, a learning for us, right? So we learned this the hard way by paying for travel and having 50% attendance. That's not what we're aiming for. But we do pay for all expenses once they get there. We have a core faculty who remain on residence with them for the entire 6 days. They're experts in school nursing, community assessment, program planning evaluation, cultural competence, organizational design, and change leadership. And it's essential that they're there all week. They're not coming and lecturing and leave in a conference model. They're living with the nurse teams. They're doing a little bit of their content every day. They're helping them develop plans and initiatives as we're together across the week. And it's the responsibility of the faculty team to string together their individual tools and techniques so that they're a package of what leadership looks like for the nurses and their executive sponsors. And we also run in different group structures. Sometimes we're all together, sometimes we run in small groups, sometimes we mix school teams. I love a mixed school team. You break up the teams together so that they're forced to talk to other people from other communities and talk about what they're doing. But we also know that they need time together, especially at the start of a project, to really be thoughtful together about what it's going to look like. And the ultimate goal is that they're going to go back to their communities and they're going to implement initiatives. So these are the five sort of global areas that we cover in the Institute. And all with the guise of getting to these enduring change plans. They use the skills that they have to address needs in the community and their needs. We don't identify their needs. Their needs come from their data. And their data is both needs assessment data and resource assessment data. Because sometimes the first health, sometimes the first health issue you tackle is the health issue that has a resource attached to it. It's not because it's not a need, right? But when you have 10 needs on the table and one of them is doable, you start there because success means you'll get resources for other places. And so when we think about schools with CDC funding, for instance, if you're getting CDC funding for a need your community has, but you also have a need for, you know, prescription drug abuse, you're going to go with the need that exists that's on the table that has a resource. Because once you get success there, you're able to access resources in other ways. And we have two underlying premises of our enduring change plans. One is that the participants share their knowledge, that while we bring in teams, they're not the only team doing the work. They should be going back to their communities and share their learning and be engaging in other folks in the community in the process, and that they implement evidence-based or scientifically supported programs. And so they're not just doing things because it feels good. They have to show that they've been effective. And then the project supports their work with these small mini-grants that are, we award to the communities that can be used. They're basically discretionary funds, so they can even be used to buy food for a meeting, which a lot of the grants that people use for large initiatives can't do. And then the whole process is supported by our technical assistance providers. We laugh, but it's true. You can't buy food for anyone with like 3 cents a person. So we are really, I'm a program planning and evaluation person, and we're sort of obsessed with our levels of analysis of this project. And given that it was started in an evaluation, we've continued that process. And so we do a four-level evaluation. We have evaluations of the institute itself, which we link to immediate institute objectives, and they also provide quality assurance for us for the experience. We have a pre- and post-tested design with a pretest, a 9-month, and an 18-month follow-up. We also use a retrospective pre in that process, and we found some pretty interesting data that our pretests don't at all match our retrospective pre's. So what people think they can do in leadership and what they think they can do in program planning is not at all what they think they can do after they realize what we're talking about. And so that's important for us in terms of even how we take data, you know, in terms of time management. Is it useful to take pretest data when you're going to engage people when they can't assess their own skills at the beginning until they know what the skill looks like anyway? We take qualitative reports at year end and program end, and then we're in the process of rolling out a case study evaluation, which is going to look at the nuances of a couple different teams from a couple different communities and what seems to be most effective in their progress towards the end. And Danielle's going to actually present a mini version of the case study for one of the schools here in Massachusetts. So here's what it looked like for the 2012 cohort. So in 2012, we brought in 12 teams from 4 states, Delaware, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Arkansas. We had 49 fellows, and so if we had 12 teams, we had 12 executive sponsors, one per team, and the rest were serving in school nurse roles in the school. I should say, of those executive sponsors, 11 of them had served in school nurse roles at some point during their career. One of them was an educational administrator who had been given school health from totally an unrelated field. And we anticipate the impact from this cohort to be on about 55,000 students. So from these 50 people and us, they have the ability to impact 55,000 students that they directly impact, that doesn't count siblings or perhaps family at home, parents, any of that. So we wanted to know why they were there, and mostly people reported that they're there to enhance their own knowledge or to be more effective in their position. Interestingly, they didn't talk about needing a network of school nurses who did this kind of work at the beginning. When you report later and ask them what they got most out of it, it was that opportunity to talk with like-minded folks or folks going through the same change process who were going to later come out at the end and be thinking population health as opposed to individual health. They also didn't say it was important. The relationships beforehand were not really that important to them. You know, you can see at the beginning, they didn't come in to have a different relationship with their executive sponsors, but when you ask them what was the most valuable experience, it was developing relationships with cross-sector groups afterwards. So it's, you know, really a change in where their minds are. Here's a tidbit of our institute evaluation. We do all 5 of those areas I put up earlier that we cover, we do specific objectives for, but these are the overarching questions. And you can see that generally in the 2012 cohort, people agreed or strongly agreed with at least their self-assessment that they could do the things that we wanted them to do, or that they felt that they were ready to start that process when they walked out our door, that they could serve as leaders in the school system, that they could utilize techniques to mobilize the community, that they could lead groups through program planning and evaluation, and that they had strategies to work effectively cross-culturally. And we always get the lowest scores. While I know it's only a 1 in the neither agree or disagree in program planning, you can see that we also have lower numbers in agree, and so smile shades, we take agree to mean, not there yet. And you're right, they don't feel as compelled to be able to do the process on their own, and that's why the technical assistance role is so important, because they're coached through the first time they do program planning and evaluation. And then they feel like they're ready to take it on their own afterwards. So from our quality assurance, this is what our data look like to suggest the quality of the intervention, the usefulness of the training, the quality of the training, and the quality of the faculty. Of the 2012 group, here are the areas of need that they addressed. We had 2 communities who looked at the absence of wellness-focused community in general. These were schools and communities that didn't have wellness teams. They weren't abiding by federal regulation. They Some of them didn't even know wellness teams were supposed to exist in their schools. Literally, oh my goodness, we're supposed to have one of those? They didn't have wellness policies, and so they were really starting at the ground framework and needed to. And the part of the process this will show you is that we want schools and communities to start where they need to start. Others worked on delayed immunization or exclusion practices, in terms of which Aaron talked a little bit about, and Danielle will give us a case study about that. One community worked on prescription pill abuse. Five worked on the subset of nutrition, physical activity, and wellness. And I should say within that, they worked on what was the need for their community. So either whether they needed to be working on nutrition more or physical activity more. And then one community worked on high stress that they were showing. They were showing high levels of stress for their student population, resulting in behavioral and physical health challenges. Okay, so here's the first round of our pre-post evaluation. These are just really what we had expected, was just that short-term goals at this point. We're only, 9 months into it at the point where this data is taken. They've only really been in school for 2 of those 9 months or so. So we're just at the beginning of the process. Already, these are our statistically significant findings. We found that we had an increase in their school nurses' membership in community organizations, and that we doubled the number of them that would serve as chairs or co-chairs in organizations of the ones who had already been in them. We showed an increase in their mentoring other people. They showed an increase in mentoring in both management skills and practices and leadership skills and practices, which is important because many of the school nurses have aides in the office or paraprofessionals who they felt like they didn't have the ability to manage before, and so they weren't being used most effectively because they weren't communicating what their needs were. That's a double slide. And then what's exciting for us, and mostly because I'm standing at a podium, is that we showed a double in the increase of them presenting at conferences, being able to say, this is what we're doing, and here's how it's effective. And they haven't even gotten that far along the road, but they had the confidence to say, what we're doing is different, it's innovative, it's change, and it's exciting. And then we actually showed a midterm goal, this idea that we weren't expecting to see yet, but we showed a significant increase in the amount of times that they were sharing peer-reviewed professional articles with family and other lay staff in the school. I mean, we didn't expect to be in midterm goals at this point of this data collection, and so it was we took the data, we sort of expected they wouldn't get there yet, but immediately they understood the need to communicate health information that was accurate and not just to keep it to themselves. It's not their domain, they need to be sharing it. And so for us, that's a really sort of exciting next step when we think about. So hopefully this time next year we'll be presenting on some student outcomes and more environmental strategies in the school, but we're really excited about where we're headed and what's been happening. I'm happy to take some questions. I have a few minutes around the process, and then Danielle will share with you one of the case studies of the schools.